Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, December 2nd, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Doctor wants Idaho parental notification law reversed due to risks to vulnerable minors. Idaho Home Learning Academy recipients using taxpayer money for non-academics, according to oversight report. University of Idaho researcher examines stereotypes of immigrants in social media comments, and Moscow survey results may mean Moscow is once again eligible for community block grants. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report, but first world headlines from Feature Story News, the Pacifica Radio Network, and the Public News Service. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. A doctor in Burley says Idaho's new parental rights law has changed the way he practices medicine when it comes to at-risk youth. This year, the legislature passed Senate Bill 1329, which requires medical providers who perform procedures or treat minors get permission from a parent unless it's a life or death emergency. Under the legislation, sponsored by Republican Senator Kelly Anthon of Rupert, parents can sue if the doctor does not get permission. Dr. Benjamin Romney told Boise television station KTVB, "I think pretty much all doctors are okay with always seeking out parents to get consent, but the reality exists that there are patients who can't get care when they need to. Not everybody has parents who are in the state. Not everybody has parents who are available when they need them. Some parents are working on it, and the trouble is that this affects people who have the hardest time accessing resources. There are people being trafficked here, and as much as I don't want that to happen, it does happen, and those people still need medical care. What happens in a healthcare system when you have people that aren't able to access care is then you go to emergency rooms, they show up without any prenatal care, so you have worse outcomes. That's worse for everybody, and so things that can be easily prevented then become more commonplace, and problems that really should be prevented become a lot bigger issues." Romney said he has met with Senator Anthon and other legislators as the 2026 legislative session gets closer, and he believes lawmakers will give the law another look. Romney said they're really open to fixing this. This was never something they intended from this legislation, and that's what I think we need to acknowledge, that this was an unintended consequence of the law. The nonpartisan Idaho Office of Performance Evaluations has released a 129-page report on the Idaho Home Learning Academy, which is a rapidly growing virtual charter school serving 7,600 students online across the state. Under Idaho Home Learning Academy's contract, state taxpayers provide between $1,700 and $1,800 per student to families enrolled in the school. The purpose of the money is to help pay families for education expenses. Presenting their report to about 100 people gathered at the state capitol today, the Office of Performance Evaluations reported most of the money was used for technology such as computers, printers, or internet access. Some of the money went to physical education and performing arts expenses. The Office of Performance Evaluations report found some families used their funding for tuition and fees at private schools, and some families used the funds for items such as barbecue tongs, cosmetics, a home theater projector screen, video games, Nintendo Switch controllers, a Meta Quest virtual reality headset, movie DVDs, weapons, sight lasers, shooting targets, remote-controlled cars, hoverboards, action figures, smartwatches, water park tickets, and the cost of registering website domain names. Families can use their allocations either through reimbursements or direct ordering programs. the three certified service providers are Braintree, HomeEd, and Harmony. The report found those three spent $12.5 million in supplemental learning funds for Idaho Home Learning Academy enrolled families during the 2024 to 2025 school year. The report also found when families did not spend any or all of their money from the supplemental learning funds, the service providers retained the money, and it did not go back to the state or the school district that has authorized the Idaho Home Learning Academy Charter School, which is the small Oneida school district in southeastern Idaho. Idaho Governor Brad Little called the report's findings troubling. According to the Idaho Capital Sun, Governor Little wrote, "We also have an obligation to be responsible stewards of taxpayer dollars. The OPE report on Idaho Home Learning Academy is troubling, especially as it pertains to supplemental learning fund expenses, academic performance, supplemental curriculum, and the funding formula that enables virtual programs to receive more funding than brick-and-mortar public schools. The OPE report reveals that statutory safeguards are insufficient, oversight is inconsistent, and accountability measures have not kept pace with the fast expansion of the IHLA program." Superintendent of Public Instruction Debbie Critchfield said when reviewing the report before its release last month, it, quote, "raises important questions about whether direct and indirect payments to families are a proper and legal use of funds appropriated for public schools." The speaker at the Malcolm M. Renfrew Interdisciplinary Colloquium at the University of Idaho today was a UI professor who is a green card holder from Germany who has conducted studies on how attitudes towards immigrants are impacted by stereotypes. Journalism and mass media professor Moritz Cleave and other researchers conducted a study on the effects of labels such as legal immigrant or illegal immigrant. Here's Mo Cleave.
And so we started out with a qualitative study where we simply asked the question, what comes to mind when you hear the term immigrant, right? And we asked this was our starting point, just to get an understanding of what people are thinking. And so in this first question, study, we asked 64 people this qualitative question first, and then we followed it up with either one of these, and there are six different ones because there are six different labels. So, and what comes to mind when you hear the word legal immigrant or illegal or documented, undocumented, and so on? And so what we found was that when we only talk about an immigrant, the frame through which information is presented or the frame through which immigrants are described is a humanistic frame. We're talking about characteristics, we're talking about value to society, whereas once we introduce a label, legal, illegal, authorized, unauthorized, and so on, then we're switching all of a sudden the conversation to a legalistic frame, right, where we talk about rules, the proper channels, how people came through. And when we only look at the label condition itself, and isolate that and split it up into the different frames that we identified for our analysis, 26% or 26% of the comments talked about rules, law, proper channels, documentation. 70% had positive characteristics to share, positive characteristics of the immigrants, even if they were in the negative label category. Negative traits were attributed in 25% of the comments, and then only 7.8% talked about assimilation and integration. What else did we find? We found that the prompt for legal immigrant yielded the most responses, like the most words, we counted words, and the least number of words was for illegal immigrants. So we're starting to see some sort of a dichotomy to come into existence between these two terms, legal and illegal, and in later studies, this plays a role.
Professor Cleave said the researchers conducted a quantitative follow-up study in which they presented participants with an array of characteristics that were stratified into positive, neutral, or negative, and then asked them to pick three which best characterized the person being looked at. They then mapped the characteristics into perceived competence and perceived warmth.
So in this experimental setup, we assigned people to one of eight random conditions, and we showed them a tweet. I guess it's called an X now. Sorry, not my choice. So this one read, "Here's a story that every American should learn more about. Alex, a legal immigrant, frequently donates to a neighborhood's church. Why don't the media talk about this more often? Learn more here," some fake link, right? And so we see the label is legal, and then frequently donates money to a neighborhood's church. That is a positive association in associated with warmth, right? And so we measured warmth, competence, and then the support of general support of immigration. And so what we found here, similar to the conversation or to the exercise that we did in the beginning, was that for one, attitudes were driven by the valence of the association, not by the label, not by the stereotype that we had initially about those labels, right? And so the associations we included in social media messages had a much stronger effect than the labels, actually. Of course, there was an effect of the label legal versus illegal, but the associations had outperformed that effect. And so these effects were mediated through warmth and competence, basically meaning we exposed people to something, they felt warmth and competence go up or down, and that in turn affected how people thought about immigration as a whole. So in other words, knowing one single piece of diagnostic information outperforms the stereotype perceptions that we get from the label. Knowing one thing is stronger than labeling somebody as an illegal immigrant or a legal immigrant, for what it's worth.
Cleave said when the researchers studied reactions to online comments about recipients of deferred action for childhood arrivals, residency status, there were correlations with perceived competence and not so much correlation with perceived warmth. Here, Cleave outlines some of his conclusions.
We can affect stereotype perceptions through comments. Like, that is a fact, right? Like, we know that there is an effect between seeing a comment or seeing a whole comment section and forming some sort of an opinion. So there is an effect of the comment section on what you think or believe about whatever object it is. But stereotype perceptions don't tell the whole story. Remember, there was a bypass effect, meaning that there's more to this, that there's other variables that still matter that we haven't found yet, or I haven't found that. I'm gonna look at them. And for specific immigrant groups, right, here in this DACA example, some perceptions might hold steady. So there's either a floor or ceiling effect, meaning that some perceptions are either really high or really low by default, while other perceptions are malleable. And so in this example, the reason I believe why warmth didn't show up is that people had generally a warm perception towards DACA recipients. And then it rendered this path to go from here through here to down here as irrelevant. So the malleable part, the part where actually change could happen, was through competence. And so another effect here could be that there was a moral ownership of the topic of immigration, and that this moral ownership was stronger with Democrats or with liberal voters. I forgot one thing. Conservative participants actually exhibited a stronger bandwagon effect. So people who identified themselves as conservative were more likely to change their opinion towards what the comment section said. And again, this effect is probably because liberal participants already had a very favorable opinion of this. So it's a strong limitation to the study.
That was University of Idaho journalism and mass media professor Moritz Cleave speaking at the Renfrew Interdisciplinary Colloquium today at the UI Library. Cleave says in a future study he wants to look at deservedness, or how much people believe immigrants deserve to be here. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox assisted with this story.
KRFP programming is sponsored by listeners like you and by Essential Art Gallery and Fine Gifts at 203 South Main Street in Moscow, showcasing high-quality art, pottery, jewelry, art glass, sculptures, scarves, textiles, wood and metal art, and fine chocolate and gifts from regional, national, and international artists. KRFP is also sponsored by Moscow Ale House, with something for everyone in the family. You can find Moscow Ale House at 226 West 6th Street or call 208-882-BREW. That's 208-882-2739.
Moscow Grants Coordinator Elisa Anderson told the City Council last night that 56.6% of those who responded to a randomized survey of city residents said they are low to moderate income. The percentage is important because the city needs to show at least 51% of city residents are low to moderate income in order for the city to qualify for Idaho Commerce Department block grants for projects that impact the entire city. The block grants are financed by Housing and Urban Development, and the Idaho Commerce Department is administering them. The Idaho Commerce Department told the city last year it was no longer eligible to apply for Idaho Community Development block grants on a citywide basis because the percentage of low to moderate income households in the city fell to 50.9%, just below the 51% required for area-wide benefit projects. Speaking to the council, Grants Coordinator Anderson referred to LMI status, which means low to moderate income status.
We decided to do a survey, which we were allowed to do in order to regain our LMI status. We mailed out 278 surveys, and we went through a process where we had a mailing list. The guidelines that they gave us had us put that list through a program, and it chose 381 addresses that were assigned a random code. And so we mailed out 278 surveys, and they just went to the resident at a certain address. No PO boxes were included. And inside that was a letter from the mayor and a survey on blue paper. On the letter from the mayor, there was a QR code so that people could answer the survey by clicking on the QR code that would take them directly to the city website, and then there were two questions to answer. Also in the envelope was a city address stamped envelope where they could mail in the survey that they got. We mailed out reminder postcards on October 1st. The original mailing went out on September 22nd. We mailed last chance reminder cards on October 8th, and we'll go forward on this, but we began our door knocking journey on October 17th, and it ended yesterday. Okay. So the survey questions were, and this is low to moderate incomes according to the criteria we were given from the HUD guidelines. And for a household of one person, if you are above $53,550, you're not considered low to moderate income. If you're below that number, you are. So you see, for two people in a household, $61,220. And for a three-person home, $68,850. Four-person home, $76,500. So basically, the survey just asked for the number of people in the household. And the household income was above or below. The door-to-door knocking started on October 17th. We ended on November 30th. We analyzed our results, which we'd been doing all along, checking them closely. We'll submit our final report on Friday, and the deadline, 75-day deadline for that is on Friday. And I did send off a picture of our final results on today, this morning, for them to look at and get some feedback, and they had no questions. Survey statistics. We had 51 responses online. We had 78 responses that were mailed in. We conducted field visits to 172 addresses. Some of those were 2, 3, and 4 times we went back to. We had 17 people decline to answer. We had 16 where we never could catch anybody home. We had 20 where the property was vacant. And so if we got envelopes back, or if the property was vacant once we went to door knock, then we mailed out a replacement survey, and we did end up mailing out 49 replacement surveys. Mm-hmm. So we ended up with 106 surveys with LMI above and 195 with LMI below.
That was Moscow Grants Coordinator Elisa Anderson speaking to the Moscow City Council last night. Anderson said housing and urban development required the city to collect at least 278 surveys, and city staff were able to collect 301. She said there was an 81% response rate. Anderson said the city will now continue to be eligible for hundreds of thousands of dollars in block grants for public facilities, parks, downtown revitalization, senior centers, and community centers. City staff are planning to apply for a block grant to build a public restroom at Lola Clyde Park.
A University of Montana public health instructor credits persistence and self-advocacy for her health and possibly her survival. 38-year-old Katie Wagner says she started feeling some disturbing symptoms when she was 29, starting her long journey to figure out what was wrong. She says cardiologists dismissed her shortness of breath and chest pain even when they started getting worse.
The self-advocacy piece really comes into play, that I kept pushing for answers knowing something was wrong, right? And knowing that it was more than anxiety, that unfortunately I think women in particular tend to hear that a lot. And I do have anxiety around not being able to breathe.
After years of ER visits and seeing specialists, she says she finally found a cardiologist who put her on the right path. That doctor sent her to the University of Washington for testing that wasn't available in Montana. Doctors there discovered a potentially fatal heart condition, significant blood flow obstruction in the largest coronary artery in her heart. She had open heart surgery in June and awoke free of the chest pain that had affected her quality of life for so long. Wagner says her condition, a myocardial bridge where the coronary artery tunnels through muscle and gets squeezed with every heartbeat, is usually benign. Hers was so serious that she was only getting half the normal blood flow through that artery. As a mom of 2 kids, ages 6 and 8, she says she came out of surgery feeling overwhelmingly grateful.
Gratitude not just for the surgery, but for the life that this has already given me, and I'm just over 4 months post-op. I feel better than I have in a decade.
Wagner says she can dance with her kids now and feels like she has a second chance at life. With a PhD in health sciences and public health, Wagner knew her symptoms were serious and she had to keep pushing for the care she needed. That's her message to others. Don't stop and don't give up hope.
Trust your gut. You know when something's off. And I honestly don't know that I would be here if I didn't trust my gut.
I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather. Mostly cloudy, low 28 tonight. Patchy, dense, freezing fog after 7 p.m. Tomorrow, cloudy, gradually becoming mostly sunny, high 38. Patchy, freezing fog before 9 a.m. Patchy fog after 4 p.m. On Wednesday night, 30% chance of snow, mainly after 4 a.m., patchy freezing fog, mostly cloudy, low 26. New snow accumulation, less than half an inch possible. 60% chance of precipitation Thursday. Snow likely before noon, then rain and snow likely. Patchy freezing fog before 10 a.m. Cloudy, high 35. New snow accumulation less than half an inch possible. Currently 28. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Brenda Cox assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. Flashpoints is up next at 7:30 live in the studios. We'll have Rude Awakening, 7:30 to 9:30. Music comes in with Brent Bent at 9:30. And at 11 o'clock, we will have Sons of Patriarchy. Stay tuned for more entertainment, information, and music throughout your evening. KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is made possible in part by support from KRFP members and
John's Alley Tavern, Moscow's home of live music. John's Alley is located at 114 East 6th Street in downtown Moscow.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Friends of the Clearwater, a 501c3 environmental nonprofit dedicated to protecting your public lands. FOC is defending the wildlands, wildlife, and waterways of north central Idaho for future generations. Friendsoftheclearwater.org.
KRFP, Moscow is the best in the USA.
Yeah.